Shmooze is going to be the first of, I think it's going to be three altogether. Three Shmoozes that are going to be put together. Based on a conversation that I heard in the back of the base medrash on Friday, because there is still learning on Friday, there was two kolo members that were discussing with one another something. And then it was funny, I mean, it's never a coincidence, but on Shabbat, the exact same question was asked of me twice by two different people. So from that conversation, and then from those two questions that somebody asked me, we're going to come up with this. The question was, how do we understand the way that the Avos are described in the Torah itself? And there was a heated discussion, a heated, animated discussion between the two sides, between the two Kol members, on how to describe when it seems that Avram Avinu, or Yitzchak Avinu, or Yaakov Avinu, or whatever it is that they did something that in our eyes seems to be that it's wrong. How do you describe such a situation, and what do we do with such a thing? On Shabbos, I was giving a shir, and although it had nothing to do with the shir, somebody brought up the exact same question. I mean, the Shvatim seem to look like they're terrible people by doing this sale, and by doing what they're doing. It seems to be very, very hard to look at these situations and understand them in such positive terms, in such a positive light, when they seem to be doing negative types of things. So the Chassam Sofer already speaks about this. The concept is brought up by the Chassam Sofer when he goes into Chinuch, but it's in a random place. It's in the middle of Torah's Moshe, in the middle of the Sefer. I'm sure it is based on one of his drushim. I just have not seen it in the drushos of the Chassam Sofer, which he says that our method of Chinuch, and the way it's always been, the way that you all grew up, the way you grew up when you went through school, whatever Jewish school you went to, you were taught Midrash. You weren't taught Pashat Pshat. Nobody here is ever taught Pashat Pshat, looking at the Pesukim and translating exactly as it is. You're all taught Midrash. All the little coloring pages that you had were all Midrash. Everything that you've learned was a Midrash, which they then put into the Pesukim. The Chassam Sofer says the reason why we're fed that Torah, kindergarten and up, is that we know who the Avos are, we know who the Shvatim are, and what they were doing before we read the Chumash, before we get into all these types of other things. So we have a positive effect, so we understand positively what the Avos and the Shvatim were. By looking at the Torah, had we just looked at the Torah and learned it kipshuta, without any other Mefarish, no Midrashim, no Rashi, nobody else there, if we just learned it as it is, then we would look at Sarah and we would say, what's so great about this woman? What's so great about Sarah? What's so bad about Esav? What's so bad about Lavan? They didn't do anything. There was a little bit, maybe, by Lavan, a little bit of trickery, which Yaakov claims, which Lavan doesn't say. So maybe you could say he gave him the wrong wife, which is also a weird claim, but he said he had a svara behind it, a logical reason behind it. Lot? What happened to Lot? What did Lot do wrong? You look at most of the people in Tanakh, it's hard to see what they had done wrong. Instead of thinking, man, these Avos are such terrible people, or Imahos, or the Shvatim are such terrible people, you can now have a different reaction when reading the text. Then when seeing something, your reaction now is, how could Avraham Avinu, one of the greatest men who ever lived, how could he have done this? How could he have kicked Ishmael and Hagar out without any food or water and send them into the desert? It's not Avram is evil for doing so. It's how could he have done this? He was such a great man. How could he have done such a thing? And now you're answering the correct question, not the wrong way of looking at things. I mean, listen, the Shvatim is a hard parsha altogether. Since this is the parsha, it's a very hard question. How could the Shvatim have possibly thought that they could kill Yosef HaTzadik to the point where they were going to sell them? And again, if the question is, the Shvatim are just normal people who do normal things and have normal sins, it's not that big of a deal. Although I haven't had the opportunity to want to kill my brothers, right? That hasn't happened, but that's because my next to closest brother is 4 years away from me. I'm sure my brothers who are close in age to one another had the thought many times of selling them, throwing them into a pit full of snakes, and killing them. And if you consider the Shvatim to be normal people, then that may be a normal reaction. That could be. Well, they were just not, they weren't in the right state of mind at that point. But the way to look at the Shvatim is not that way. If they're known as Shivtei Ka, if they're the fathers of our nation, although they're not Avos, they're still the leaders of our nation. You can't look at them that way. So there are answers, and I can answer it. the Rush says, that Yosef felt the dreams that he had had were nevuah. And if you're kovish nevuah, so you withhold your nevuah and you don't tell it over, then what's the halacha? Chayv misa. So he couldn't not say over the nevuah. He had to tell the dreams over to the father. There's shvatim held, like Yerushalmi, and Perek Ches of Trumas, that says that if a person speaks Lashon Hara, Eliyahu HaNavi doesn't appear to them. And if Eliyahu HaNavi doesn't appear to them, then certainly they can't get a nevuah. So the shvatim held that he was speaking Lashon Hara. That was the whole thing in the beginning of what he had said to Yaakov Avinu, and if they were speaking Lashon, if he's speaking Lashon Hara, he can't get a nevuah. So he's a liar, he's a Navi Sheker. The halacha by a Navi Sheker is Chayav Misa. That's why he would be Chayav Misa for what he was doing. But Yosef HaTzadik wasn't a Baal Lashon Hara, because he was Neman Alav Kibetre. Neman Alav Kibetre is halacha that if you have a Talmud Mubah telling over something to his Rebbe, which the Rebbe knows his Talmud would not lie about, then Neman Alav Kibetre works. You're allowed to say that if it's in order to improve someone else for something that they're doing, if the Rebbe has the opportunity to be able to fix them. So Yosef HaTzadik, who is the Talmud Mubah of Yaakov, you know, had the ability to say something to Yaakov to make it all work. So now we have Neman Alav Kibetre. So what? Wasn't really Lashon Hara. But the Shvatim held that Yosef HaTzadik wasn't a Talmud Mubak of Yaakov Avinu. He was a Talmud just like the rest of them. He wasn't Neman Alav Kibetre. And if he wasn't Neman Alav Kibetre, he wouldn't be able to say it. They didn't know that Yaakov and Yosef were learning at night together, learning the Sidrei Mishnayot, that's Ben Zikunim, of Zroim Kachim, Nashim Yeshuos, and Moed, to be able to understand what there was to know. There's so much here. So obviously you can answer that. They went to Shechem to get away from Yosef HaTzadik. Does anybody know how far away it is from Be'er Sheva to Shechem? Be'er Sheva, which is where they lived, to Shechem. You know how far of a trip that is? To go graze your sheep? It's at least a day-long trip. At least by walking. At least. And you're going through your mountains with sheep. I would assume it took 2 or 3 days to take your sheep up there and to get your sheep back. They went so far away so they wouldn't be anywhere near Yosef HaTzadik. Now again, if you're going to look at the Shvatim as just being normal people, you're going to forget, you're not going to know any of these halachos, number one. You're not going to attribute them over to Yosef or the Shvatim. And you're just going to say like, it was a big mistake. Somebody did something wrong and something's there. But that's not the way we look at things. There's answers. There's answers. We just need to know where to look, how to look, to find them and put it together. But there's more to this than just that. So why? Why would the Torah write that Reuben slept with Bilhah when he really just moved around the beds? Why write it so badly? Why write it so terrible? Why in the world would it say about B'nai Eli that they slept with the woman outside of the Beis HaMikdash when all they did was delay bringing their korban? That's all they did. Why would the Torah make Bathsheba and David HaMelech look so horrid? So horrid. As if David HaMelech is trying to hide the fact that he slept with a woman and then killing the husband to make sure if there was a get and there was everything, why wouldn't the Pesukim tell us this? Why? Why would the Pesukim say this? So Wolfson points out, Rav Moshe Wolfson points out, that there's no letter in the Torah that is attached to another letter. We all know if you have a Sefer Torah, you have an aleph. The little pointy thing of the aleph is connected to the side of a lamed. That whole Sefer Torah is puzzles. We all know that, right? That's Salah. No letter is connected to another letter. Out of 301,805 letters of the Torah, not a single letter is connected to another letter. Not one. Not one letter is like that. So the question is, why? Why is that? The answer is, because sometimes you have to read in between the lines. You can't just take the Torah Shebuk Tzav as it is, because the Torah Shebuk Tzav isn't as is without anything else. We know it came down from Har Sinai. It's believing Jews. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu in some way, shape, or form at Har Sinai. He brought down Torah Shebuk Tzav, and he brought down Torah Shebaal Peh. And there's both. You can't just accept the Torah Shebuk Tzav as it is. There's no such thing. There is no such thing. There's no ability to understand it. Even Pashat Pshat without Torah Shebaal Peh. There's no way to do such a thing. We don't do things like that. Torah Shebuk Tzav and Torah Shebaal Peh are intertwined together so much so to the point where you cannot read a letter of the Torah without knowing there's something in between these letters. Something could be written in. Something's going on in between the lines, in between the letters, in between the parshos, in between the svarim. There's always something there. And that's the point of why everything is different. Everything is separate from one another for that very, very reason. So to learn Torah Shabbat Sab without Torah Shabbat Peh is impossible. Impossible. There is no pshat without a Gemara, without a Medrash. There's no such thing. Just because a guy gets up and says, I'm reading the Pasuk and I understand it this way, that doesn't make it pshat. It doesn't even make it Torah. It's not even Torah Shabbat Sab. It's a total misunderstanding of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us and why He gave us this. That's completely gone. Which is why, again, you start kids and you don't just read the Pesukim. You teach them what's going on behind the scenes. They have to know what's happening so that they can ask the right questions and not silly questions. Not the wrong questions. So they know what's going on. But this is good. But you need a full Masorah here. And that's why this is going to take a little bit of time. In Warsaw, there was a paper that was known as the Haint. I have a feeling that it was more of a German paper, that it wasn't... The Haint does sound like a more of a Yiddish word than a Polish word. But the Haint was a newspaper that was known for many, many Jews. Someone had written an article in the Haint in Yiddish, and he ripped through the others. Just completely ripped them apart. Wrote a scathing, very mocking article on their mistakes and the different things that the others had done wrong, and why it's silly for us to understand them as more than just human beings. Rav Aaron Cutler wrote a rebuttal in Der Judische Tageblatt. If anyone wants to translate that. It was on April 16, 1935. He wrote it in Yiddish, but it was translated by the Jewish Observer in March 1991, in page 50. So I have it right over here if anybody wants, but it's, I'm going to read just a couple lines from Aaron Cutler on this. How shocked I was to see the terrible blasphemies and the violation of the sanctity of our holy Avos and Imos that these papers contained. The laws of our holy Torah obligate me to react to this unheard-of profanation of the truth. Chilul Shem Shemayim and violation of the dignity of the Jewish nation. I thus feel compelled to depart from my usual practice and to issue the following public statement. The holy Avos, who were the most luminous, loftiest, and purest personalities, the holiest creatures, represent the foundation of eternal spiritual vitality, the full range of positive attitudes, the wellsprings of chesed, for the entire world and for all of mankind. The Avos were, in fact, held in the highest esteem by every nation on earth. The worst enemies of the Jews did not dare tamper with their luminous and holy image. Skipping a little, the worst victims of this betrayal are our youth, for whom these stories are an insidious venom which can poison their entire way of thinking, especially in this area of widespread ignorance. And that's the main idea. Everybody is trying to go out around and say that the Avos were this, the Avos are that. Really, they're just human beings. Really, they can do anything. They're all doing it in the sense of enlightenment, to tell people more, to allow them to think a little bit clearer. If anybody knows anything about liberal propaganda, if you've read anything on how liberalism started, the whole point of it is to darken people's minds that nobody thinks. That all you're doing is you think you're thinking, you think you're making a decision, but really you're closing your mind to everything else. And you're only thinking one way and nothing else. And this is what it means in the area of widespread, this era of widespread ignorance. When so many young people are not even vaguely familiar with what the Chumash writes about the holy Avos, and certainly do not know what Chazal say about them. They will instead learn about the patriarchs from a Haint perspective, guided from the Chumash motifs, which are permeated with cynical ridicule and the spirit of the Yesutskin, which is the Jewish communists, the Jewish communist way of thinking. He goes on and he says, moreover, if we continue to tolerate such falsehoods in our homes, how can we continue to ask God to answer our prayers in the merit of those Avos and Imos that these columns malign, that they're going up against? Understandably, it is impossible to fully convey even one of the myriad facets of this subject in the confines of the letter. This inadequacy on our part, however, does not give us license to remain completely silent either. He then signs it by Aaron Cutler, saying that I am Aaron Cutler, Rosh Yeshiva of Kletsk, which at the time in 1935 he was. And he goes against, that was, I don't know if it was the first time that Aaron decided to put out something like this, but it certainly should not be the last. Aaron Cutler explained himself years later. Obviously, if we're talking 1935 in Warsaw, he left a few years later, got out of the Holocaust, was able to come to America and started Lakewood. Took a little bit to start Lakewood, but he came to Lakewood. Eventually, he ended up having a series of mechanchen. Now, Rav Aaron Cutler died in the early 60s. He gave a shiur to mechanchen, teachers of Torah to little kids. I don't know where it was, but it was during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva in 1961. Okay. Now, what we want to do is try to go through this letter. It's in Mishnas Rav Aaron, page 167, and understand what his view is on this type of a subject. Because to really go through, you have to know. But I have to emphasize that there are gedolim that hold a little bit differently. It must be emphasized that way. Rav Shamshon Revol Hirsch was very famous for his outlook, which was very different. That you can say things about the Avos in order to almost humanize them, in order to learn from their mistakes, to take them for yourself. Not as drastic or as extreme as the Reform Movement did, and making them understand that the Avos were not just human, they were normal human beings who sinned quite often. Not as drastic. Rav Shamshon Revol Hirsch still went with the Gemara's views that they were tremendously holy and lofty people, and that they were tremendous tzaddikim and gedolim. But nonetheless, Rav Hirsch says that they did make mistakes, and they certainly have done mistakes. But the Mesorah that you're hearing here, the Rebbeim that you have around, are not of that opinion. So if you want to hear that side of the story, you have to ask a different Rebbe who has heard Shiurim from that point of view, from that side, that knows what's going on from that side. Our point of view, what I've learned from my Rosh Yeshiva, what Rabbi Friedman heard, what Rabbi Seltzman heard, Rabbi Sheinfeld, Rabbi Newman, Rabbi Tversky, what we've heard, and from our Rebbeim have always been the same way that Reb Moshe Feinstein is in his tshuva on how to learn up the Avos. And this is what Rav Aaron is saying. He quotes a Rambam, and this Rambam is really all we're going to explain today, and really the end of our discussion for today. Listen to this Rambam, it's in Hilchos Me'ilah, Sof Hilchos Me'ilah. HaRambam, Sof Hilchos Me'ilah writes, Roi l'adam lisbonin v'mishpitei HaTorah Kedosha. Person needs to sit and think about the mishpatim of the Torah, about the laws of the Torah, v'leida sof v'nyanu kifi koho, and needs to know what those laws mean and how to do those mitzvos according to your own power, according to what you can understand and what you can take out of it. The davar shelo yimsolotam, something that you don't understand, v'lo yeda lo ila, something that you cannot get, that you don't get the reason for, al yihi kal be'enah, do not let that subject be light in your eyes. Just because you don't understand it does not mean that it's not a true law. V'lo yaros lalo sel Hashem pen yifros bo, do not destroy and try to go up against God and say He's wrong, so to speak, pen yifros bo, because maybe you'll breach a wall that you shouldn't have breached. Your thought process when it comes to learning Torah, says the Rambam, should not be your thought process the way it is learning anything else. Where if you see a mistake in a science book, you can throw out that page from the science book. You see a mistake in the math book, you can throw out that piece of the math book. When it comes to Torah, it's not that way. It's not that way. You can't throw out anything because you're not right. Bogere, he says, come and see. Kamach mir Torah b'me'ilah. How machmir is the Torah by the law of me'ilah? Me'ilah is putting your hand and touching or using something which is hektish. Umayim eitzim ba'avanim. Offer ve'efer. Wood, stone, dirt, ashes. Kevin shenikoshem adon olam aleim. When you call God's name upon it and you make it hektish, you say that this thing is sanctified to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Bitzvarim bobat, just with words. By saying that this rock is now for our Kodesh Baruch Hu, this belongs to God, just by saying so, Nisgadshu, they become holy. The Kohanoi ben mina kol, and if you act in a profane manner, and if you act in a whole manner to that rock, mol, you're over on Me'ilah, you're over on Alav, and you get Malkus for such a thing. Vafilu hayashogik, even if you did it accidentally, Tzarek Kapara, even if you didn't mean to, you didn't know that it was hektish, you had no idea it was hektish. You forgot that it was Hekdesh. Nonetheless, you still need a kapara. Kal v'chomer, says the Rambam, l'mitzvah shechokak lanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to a mitzvah that God gave us himself. He's the one who made the law. Shelo yevayit ha'odam behen. No person should kick them away, throw them aside and say it's garbage. Shelo yedatam, because you don't understand the reasoning. V'lo yechafed devarim asher lo kein al Hashem, and do not say words which are not true. An HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'lo yachshuv ha'machshav to kidivrei chol. Don't allow your thought process to think of it as just another normal thing that you can argue on, that you can put your mind on, or something like that. That's not what Torah is. The Torah is too much depth, explains Rav Aaron Cutler. Way too much depth. Rochav Midian, more wider than the sea, the amount of depth that goes to the Torah itself. If we approach Torah with our limited seichel, as bright as we all are, as smart as we are, as genius as we all are, if you approach Torah with our limited seichel and our puny abilities, our inability to understand everything, we are lowering the Torah to our madriga. We're saying that the Torah only exists for me, and it's only for me. It was made for a human mind, and it's there for us to be able to argue with. And we know that's not true. We have restraints. We have limits. We have our own sentiments, our own tendencies, our own abilities, which is by definition not the greatest. How many movies have you guys seen in your life? You don't think that affects you? How much music have you listened to? How much garbage have you heard your entire life? And every single bit of that garbage affects every bit of your thought process. Every bit of your thought process. Even someone just saying, as a side note, the Avos are not as great as we think they are. That affects your thinking. It affects your mode of thinking. It affects everything you do. Even if you argue on it, it's still there. It's inside your head. We are by definition limited, and there's a limit, therefore, to what we will be able to take out from the Torah. There will never be an ability for us to perfect our knowledge. When it comes to Torah, there will never be an ability for us to figure out everything the Torah is trying to tell us. Even if you understood Hebrew perfectly, the language is not in modern day Hebrew. It's Lashon HaKodesh, which includes all the gematrias that you can think of, all the Rosh Hashanahs, all the Sophia Tavis, there's everything there. Every word is specifically used. Every word is something to be learned out of. It's not simple. So what do we have to do? You have to learn the Kedusha Vitara. Meaning there has to be a Kedusha when a person learns, a purity when a person learns. Halavai, we would go to the mikvah every morning, although that's unnecessary and I'm not telling people to do that. Halavai, we would do it though. And you have to understand, there's a Kabbalah Ne'amana. There's a Mesorah that came down in how to learn Torah from Har Sinai. It was brought down to Moshe. I mean, although that Mesorah was changed over the years, and things have definitely changed in our methods, in our abilities, and what we do when it comes to learning Torah, there's no question that we have to accept, not reject, those who have forged the path before us. Those who have made a road to understanding the Torah before us. You know, I saw a picture the other day of a highway in Japan. This highway in Japan was unbelievable. It was a highway that went through, it was a two-lane highway, and it had snow piled up 20 meters onto the side of the road. You saw it was all the way up to the tops of trees. Think 20 meters, guys. That's almost 60 feet. So it was unbelievably high. You saw the cars, little tiny cars inside. It was taken from a helicopter. So little tiny cars inside with the snow, huge snow on the sides. And there's one path that goes through, and you see this snaking, winding path all the way through. An unbelievable thing. I don't know where it was in China somewhere, where they had this road. I don't know how they cleared the path. I have no clue how they cleared it. I guess they kept clearing it and kept doing it. I have no clue how it happened. But nonetheless, there was a path right down the middle, and I sat there and I thought, this is exactly what I'm talking about. You could try to knock down those snowbanks and try to make a brand new road through those snowbanks, but do you realize what it's like trying to get through 60 feet of snow in order to plow your way through? Do you think you'll even be able to make a tunnel? What are you going to be able to do? To sit on the road and maybe dig from the road, dig out to the side a little bit, maybe then you'll be able to do. Maybe then you'll be able to get somewhere. But to make a brand new road, a brand new road, what are you going to do? How are you going to do that? You're going to take a shovel and start, do you know how long that's going to take you to make a foot, let alone everything else? So what are you going to do? You're going to have to just pile on top and just start walking on top. We all know that's That's not going to happen. Maybe if we forge through on that path that's already made, maybe we can get a masu, a little bit of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to understand. But if we don't use it, you're not even going to get the masu. You're not going to get any of the depth of this or in that fact. My point of number one over here is don't lose the forest for the trees. Don't lose it. When you look at a situation where the avos, the shvatim, and something looks questionable, think to yourself, not what's wrong with the avos. Don't think to yourself, something bad happened. The shvatim are terrible people. That's not the way to think. Don't lose the forest for the trees. Think, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu put this in the Torah? Why is this necessary for me to know? It's one thing to say that the shvatim were crazy. It's another thing to say that God put it in the Torah to let you know that they were crazy. Why is it there? If you're looking at the trees, then you're looking at and you're saying, what's wrong with the avos? Something happened. The avos did something wrong. If you're looking at the forest, you're looking at a total picture. And you're saying, we know the avos and the shvatim are awesome. What is the Kodesh Baruch Hu hinting toward us here? And what is this supposed to teach us? That way you ask the right questions. If you have the right information, you can ask it in the right way. Otherwise, it could just become boggled down. It could be diluted with every other piece of garbage that you're throwing inside there. And then you lost everything. That's number one. We are going to get to the continuation of this, but that's number one of what we have to understand. So to go on, to sort of summarize what we've said, Rav Aaron Cutler held that there is a method to learning Torah, and it's only through forging through the path that was already made for us, as opposed to making a new one. Because if we think that our minds are capable of creating brand new paths within the Torah, something that has not been made by someone before us, it is impossible. Our minds are not capable of doing such things. We have no ability to look at even a tiny drop of the sea of Torah that's out there. We have to be able to use those methods already created and use it well. And even then, you still need Kedusha Tahara to be able to get there. That's lesson number one. We'll start with lesson number two next week. For now, have a good